From the Berkshires to the Sound, from wherever you live in MLB America, this is Inside the Parker. You give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the scoop on Major League Baseball. Now here's Baseball Hall of Fame voter number 83, Rob Parker.
This is Inside the Parker. I'm your host, Rob Parker. What a show we have lined up for you today. MLB.com's Mark Feinsand drops by to talk Major League Baseball all around both leagues. That and much more. Let's go.
Batter up!
To lead off, it's getting robbed.
And keep him up.
Rob's hot take on the three biggest stories in Major League Baseball. Number one.
Say it isn't so, but the Oakland A's could be moving out of Oakland. Baseball has given its blessing that the A's ownership can start looking around for a new home. The A's have been there in Oakland since 1968. We get it. It's a bad stadium. They desperately need a new place to play. But, man, what a blow it would do to the city and to the fans there. Have a long-standing tradition. People forget that the Oakland A's, you know, with the Bash Brothers, go back to the 70s when they had Reggie Jackson and Joe Rudy. They also had Ricky Henderson there. It's a lot of history. Catfish Hunter, Vida Blue. I can go on and on and on about all the great players who came out of Oakland. And at one time, they won three World Series in a row. 1971, 72, and 73, an amazing franchise. But this could be the end if they don't get a stadium. And my gut is that this will be the end.
Number two.
Enough already with the no-hitters. What kind of baseball is this? We had four no-hitters in 40 days of the 2021 season. I mean, that's at a record pace, which is ridiculous. It used to be like unbelievable to actually see a no-hitter or witness it or go to a ball game or watch it on TV. And now it's happening almost once a week in this very young baseball season. And obviously, you know, there's a couple things at hand here. Baseball played with the baseball. They didn't want as many home runs, so they kind of doctored the ball. Number two, the average batting average is 234 in the big leagues. That's the fourth consecutive year. So guys don't hit for average anymore. It's feast or famine, strikeouts or home runs, which is bad. And here's another stat that we shouldn't be happy with. Strikeouts are outpacing hits. We now see more strikeouts than we see hits in the major leagues. Man, something's got to be figured out. This feels like 1968 when the mound was too high and, you know, people couldn't hit for average. I think only one player in the American League hit over 300 in 1968, if you could believe that. And Bob Gibson and all these pitchers dominated in that era. Mickey Lolich and, you know, Sandy Koufax. It was just unbelievable. So, yeah. Baseball needs to get this figured out. We need more offense. We need more contact. We need more balls in play. And we don't need more no-hitters. Let's keep them at a minimum where people can appreciate them and not make them one where we see every 10 days or so. That's not what we're looking for. How about a little hit and runs? How about some doubles, some triples? Get the ball in play.
Number three.
It's been about a week since the Angels cut Albert Pujols, one of the all-time great players, one of the greatest right-handed hitters who've ever played the game. And Albert Pujols said he wasn't done and he wants to play again. But after that was shot down by his former manager, Tony La Russa, with the White Sox, that there was no room at the end for Pujols, I'm not so sure he's going to get another opportunity.
Here comes the big interview. Listen and learn.
Oh, it's so good.
All right, now let's bring in author Rocco Constantino, who's written a new book that I'm very interested in. It's called In Beyond Baseball's Color Barrier, The Story of African Americans in Major League Baseball, Past, Present, and Future. Rocco, man, I'm interested in this book. Tell me why I need to pick it up.
Well, thanks a lot, Rob. It's great to be on your show. You know, I'd say the main reason to pick up this book is it's a comprehensive history. We start in 1879 and we examine how the color line was eventually drawn in Major League Baseball, and then we look at the efforts to erode it, and we get to Jackie Robinson. But, you know, then between Jackie Robinson and the modern day, you know, we celebrate all those great African-American players, the guys that played through the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, all the way up through today. And then there's, you know, last half of the book is looking towards the future, and there's been, you know, a very well-publicized downtrend in participation among African-Americans in the majors. But it's kind of leveling off, and we think we see some hope for the future, and that's where the book ends up. So, like I said, I'm very proud of the research that was done, and it's comprehensive. Like I said, it starts in 1879. It goes all the way through today to look to the future. Has some great firsthand interviews in there, and I'm really happy with the finished product.
Rocco, tell me about the 1800s, but tell me about the black players playing in the major leagues during that time. What was that like for them? How dangerous was it? Was, you know, did people not really make a big issue of color? How did that play out?
It was, and we actually started off with an interesting case, a guy by the name of Will White, who played one game in 1879 and was pretty much a footnote in Major League history until 2004, when they discovered that Will's mother was half black, and she was married to a slave owner. And like I said, that goes back to 1879. And he played one game as a fill-in, and he represented himself as a white person. But at the time, you know, if he would have been following the laws, he would have been considered African American. But he tried to get around that because he had light skin. Anyway, there's a lot of thought that he was found out after one game and maybe, you know, wasn't allowed to play after that because he played one game and did well. But anyway, the first person to openly play as an African American and not try to hide behind that was Moses Fleetwood Walker. And he played on the 1884 Toledo Blue Stockings. 1 year in the majors with his brother, Weldy. He was the last African-American to play before Jackie Robinson. And, yeah, he faced all the same stuff that you could imagine from that time. He had players like Cap Anson threatening to boycott games with him. There were different in the minor leagues, International League in 1901, I believe it was, passed their rules. You know, they had seven African-American players in the league that were good, and they were, you know, starting to get a little nervous that they were going to take other people's jobs. And so, you know, they formally passed the law banning any future contract for African-Americans. And then some other leagues either adopted that in writing or in theory and in general with the gentleman's agreement in Major League Baseball. And, you know, examine all that kind of stuff. It was very, very interesting to dig into.
Our guest here on Inside the Parker is author Rocco Constantino. He's written a book called In Beyond Baseball's Color Barrier. Tell me about Jackie Robinson, and did you find out anything new about that? We all know about Jackie Robinson, how important he was not only to baseball, Rocco, but also to America. He changed America when he took the field for the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947. Were there any interesting tidbits you find out about Jackie?
Yeah, I a lot of the stuff that, you know, he's so well researched and written about, it was great to read. One thing that struck me was, you know, and you always heard that he had the support of the fans. I was reading about, you're an East Coast, New York City kind of guy, but Jackie's debut in the minor league the year before he played for the Dodgers. And the first game he played was at Roosevelt Stadium in Jersey City. Mm-hmm. And then just reading the newspaper accounts, though, at that time, I mean, there was genuine excitement about him playing minor league baseball. There were fans outside the ballpark, you know, selling pins that said, "I'm with Jackie," and had his face on it. And, you know, he was beloved. I mean, you read the papers and you read the stories from that were written during the time that he played, and it's fascinating. And one of my favorite ones was when he played for the Montreal Royals in 1946, and they won the championship, and they're one of the great minor league teams of all time. And after the game was over and they won their championship in their home ballpark, the fans rushed the field and they stormed Jackie, and they were ripping his shirt off and they wanted a piece of him. And it said he had to run clear out of the stadium with all his fans chasing him. And, you know, there was a comment in one of the books I read that said, like, it was, you know, for once there was a mob of people chasing an African-American for a good reason. And it just kind of struck at the time, like, wow, that's what these people really, really went through. And, it just was very striking to read a lot of the stuff, the accounts from that time.
And then you had the players boom, black players between the 70s and the 90s. I mean, the league and the game was littered with black stars all over the place. We already know. And when you can think about that, black players really weren't able to play until 1947, yet you look at the record books and black players are represented all over the place. That was a great time in baseball. I mean, there were just stars everywhere, wasn't there?
It was, and that's where my book kind of takes that turn from the historical and digging into the influence then of all the black players had on the subsequent generations. I was watching a podcast just last night with Bob Kendrick, the president of the Negro Leagues Museum, and he had David Price and CC Sabathia on there. And they were talking about, CC was talking about learning about Bob Gibson and the generation before. Dave Stewart was another person that was on the broadcast with them. And Stewart said, to David Price, there's going to be some kid, young African-American pitcher that looks up and says, wow, I want to be like David Price. So when you see them talking about how influential all the previous generations were, it really kind of hits home. And that was something I covered in the book, right? Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, they grew up watching Jackie Robinson and being influenced by him, Larry Doby, all these guys. And then those stars of the 70s and 80s, they watched Willie Mays as kids. They watched Hank Aaron. They watched Bob Gibson. And there was never a time, even during segregation, there were the Negro League stars were big too. They drew a lot. So there was never a time where there was a shortage of black stars. It's just a matter of hoping that they start to gravitate towards back to baseball.
Well, Rocco, where can people get your book? The book is in Beyond Baseball's Color Barrier, The Story of African Americans in Major League Baseball, Past, Present, and Future. Where is it available?
It's available everywhere online. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble through my publisher, Roman & Littlefield, or on my website, roccoconstantino.com. It's available widely all over the place.
All right, Rocco, we appreciate you. Good luck with the book, and we'll definitely be looking to read this one. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
It's time for the Pocket Protector Central. The analytic numbers you need to know. Well, maybe.
Anthony Masterson is his name. BS Analytics is his game. What do you got for me, Anthony?
We spoke last week about just how good pitchers have been so far this season. 4 no-hitters, or 5 if you're generous, putting offense in a spot we haven't seen since the divisional era began in 1969. We see the results, but why are we seeing pitchers dominate the way they are? Fangraph's Chet Gutwein had a theory he posited last week, and the numbers do bear it out. In the first 6 weeks of the season, we've seen hurlers pouring pitch after pitch into the upper part of the zone. Now, StatCast breaks down where pitches end up and into up to 39 different zones. Zones 1 through 9, considered the heart of the plate. 11 to 19, the shadow zones, just on the edges. 21 to 29, the chase zones, while 31 to 39 are considered waste pitches. This season, we're seeing a swinging strike rate over 20% of pitches into the top shadow zone of the plate, up a full percentage point from last year, while batters are swinging and missing at 19.2% of pitches at the top heart of the zone. Normally, the pitches guys can barrel up most consistently, up over 2 full percentage points from last year and nearly 5% from 2017. Spin rates and velocities on fastballs are at an all-time high in the StatCast era, and it would appear the pitchers are finding hitters' weaknesses better than ever before.
Turn money into more money.
Now it's time for Betting on the Bases with Dave Gaska.
Love that money. Love that money.
We'll get the weekend started off right at Fenway Park. You get the Angels and the Red Sox. Boston only 10-10 at home this season, but 22-15 overall. They're one of the surprise teams at the American League. And who would have thought Nick Pivetta this season is 5-0 with an ERA at 3.19 against Griffin Canning, 3-2 with an ERA at 5.19. I'm taking the over in that game. Also, I'm taking the Cardinals and the Padres. That is one of the nightcaps on Friday night. I'm taking the St. Louis Cardinals in this one against Joe Musgrove. Musgrove, who had a no-hitter earlier this season, the San Diego native, has given up 9 total runs his last 2 games. I'm taking the Cardinals as a road dog in that affair. The other game I'm taking is the Cubbies and the Tigers. I'm taking the Chicago Cubs on the road. Jake Arrieta versus Tarik Skubal in the pitching matchup. Skubal this season is 0-5 with a 5.67 ERA. Tigers the worst team in Major League Baseball. I'm taking the Cubbies with a little bit of chalk.
When Rob was a newspaper columnist, he lived by this motto. If I'm writing, I'm ripping. Let's bring in a writer or broadcaster, old or new.
All right, now let's welcome to the podcast Mark Feinsand, the Fine, baseball writer from MLB.com. Mark, welcome to the podcast. How you doing, my man?
I'm good, Rob. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great, man. I want to pepper you with some questions about all over baseball. Let's start in New York with the Metropolitans. And did they make a mistake putting Jacob DeGrom back out on the mound after he had come out of a game and there was questions about an injury, and they put him back out there? Now he's on the 10-day IL. Is this something to be worried about or not so much?
I would say not so much. I don't think it was a mistake. I mean, they scratched him from a start when he had some tightness. They did tests. They didn't find anything. He said he was good to go. Obviously, he threw him aside and felt fine. Went in, pitched 5 innings, and then came out again. You know, I'm not sure it was a mistake. I think it was a very smart move for them to put him on the IL, even though the MRI revealed nothing, because this is not a guy you want to mess around with. And the fact that he's had, you know, the issue twice in a matter of a week or so, you know, the fact that it's a 10-day IL now, this only means he really misses one start, gets pushed back a day on his second start. So I thought it was a good move for them to put him on the IL, but I didn't have a problem with them throwing him to begin with.
Mark, let's go to the Angels and Shohei Ohtani, who is putting together a season baseball people haven't seen since Babe Ruth, where a guy's pitching, throwing over 100 miles an hour. He's hitting home runs. The other day he pitched and played right field. I mean, they didn't want to take his bat out of the lineup. What do you make of this season? This could be an MVP season if he puts it together.
I love it. I mean, there's no more fascinating player in the league to watch right now. And it's not just that he's pitching and hitting. He's doing both of them at all-star levels, right? I mean, you're talking about a guy, he doesn't have the innings pitch of some of the top guys, but he's thrown 25 innings. He's got a 2.10 ERA. You know, the walks are an issue, but he doesn't give up very many hits. Strikes out well over a batter an inning. And he's a big slugger. And, you know, I don't know if the MVP thing is going to happen for two reasons. Number one, he plays on a team that is not very competitive at the moment. He is one of their few pitchers who's actually pitching to their capabilities. And secondly, he plays with Mike Trout. And Mike Trout is such a good player, and he's such a generational talent that he is always going to be in that MVP conversation as well. And if you have two guys in that conversation from a losing team, it's almost hard for me to see either of them winning it. But if the Angels can turn things around and contend, and Ohtani keeps doing what he's doing, both pitching and hitting, you know, the sky's the limit for this guy. He's such an impressive talent, and it's taken a few years for him to sort of put it all together where he can do both and do both well. But, man, he's fun to watch.
Our guest is Mark Feinsand from MLB.com, and you had a story on the site on Wednesday, Mark, about Trevor Story, the shortstop of the Rockies. And you said if there is a deal, it looks like there could be a deal. He's going to be a free agent next year, right? So they unload him, get what they can if they're not going to re-sign the guy. And these clubs, you said, are the best fits. Tell me the best fits for him.
Well, I mean, I think the obvious best fit is the Yankees. They're a team that is not afraid to be aggressive, to go out and make a big move at the deadline, to add a big talent. If they're willing to go over that luxury tax threshold, which they might have to do if they add his $6 million over the last couple months, you can move Gleyber Torres back to second base, which I think is a better natural position for him, and put Story in at short. They're to me the most obvious fit. The A's are a team, again, Billy Beane. Every time he sees a window, sees an opportunity, he's not afraid to go out and make a deal. Shortstop's been a bit of a problem there. Elvis Andrews has been a huge disappointment in Oakland. So I think they're a possibility. And then the Brewers are another team. The Reds, a couple NL Central clubs that I put in there, not getting the production out of shortstop and in a very winnable division. And the last team I had was the Rays. You know, the money is what would get in the way there. They've got more than enough prospects, the top-rated farm system in the league, according to MLB Pipeline. So the question is, would Colorado pay down some of that salary to increase the level of prospect they get back? If they are, and the Rays decide that's a spot that they need some help in, Willy Adames, Joey Wendell have not combined for very much offense out of the shortstop position this year. The Rays could be a stealth team to get into the Story sweepstakes.
All right, Mark, you just mentioned the A's and the news, of course. Baseball's given its blessing that they can look around, possible relocation because they don't have a new deal. Give me two or three cities that the Oakland A's could wind up.
Well, Las Vegas is a very popular potential destination. Obviously, they've played some games there in the regular season, some other teams. They've had success with AAA baseball there. And just like they finally got an NFL team, that sort of broke the ice in terms of professional sports in Las Vegas. They've got an NHL team now. So the idea that you can't have a team in Vegas because of the gambling aspect, that's out the window now. Charlotte, another city that's been talked about a lot. Nashville, where Dave Dombrowski was before he went to the Phillies. They've been trying to get a team. So there are options out there. And now with MLB sort of giving the A's their blessing to look around, that's going to put some pressure on, the city of Oakland to step up and get that ballpark built downtown, because, they've already lost the Warriors. They've already lost the Raiders. You have to imagine that Oakland does not want to lose a third professional team.
Yeah, sounds like it. We'll see what happens there. Last thing, something fun. You've been covering baseball forever, and you've been to every ballpark and all around the country. The best hot dog at a Major League Baseball stadium.
Let's see. I like the Fenway Frank. The Dodger dog has a unique sort of flavor and appeal to it. I wouldn't want that to be my everyday hot dog, but for the few times that I go to L.A., a Dodger dog's always a must. But if I have to pick one, I'm going to go with the sausages at Yankee Stadium. I know it's a hometown pick, and it's not technically a hot dog, but you give me a spicy sausage at Yankee Stadium, I'll take that every time.
You know what? What I love about Yankee Stadium and the hot dogs is that you have three brands you can get there. How many ballparks, Mark, have three? I could get a Sabret's, you could get a Nathan's, or you can get, what was the other one? There's three hot dogs you could get at Yankee Stadium, but I'm a Sabret's guy. Give me some red onions, give me some spicy brown mustard, and I'm good to go.
You got to cheat a little bit. You got to go with the Sabret hot dog and then go over to the Nathan's stand and get some Nathan's fries.
Now it's time for some Diamond Dust with Wish TV's Phil Sanchez.
Out of here!
He played baseball in college. Now hear his MLB knowledge.
Well, it's been announced that the Oakland Athletics will start to explore the possibility of relocating with the blessings of Major League Baseball. The A's declaration likely designed to pressure the city of Oakland into approving plans for a new waterfront ballpark. The proposal includes a privately financed stadium, but it also requires an $855 million commitment from the city. Now, should they move, the A's would become only the third Major League Baseball team in the last 50 years to relocate, joining the Texas Rangers, who moved from D.C. in the 1970s, and the Washington Nationals, who moved to D.C. in 2005. It's been reported that there are cities, five of them, that would welcome the A's with open arms. Those cities, Las Vegas, Portland, Montreal, Nashville, and San Jose. Out of those, my money would be on Nashville. The Music City has been trying to get an MLB team for years now, and they have a lot of support, too, inside and outside of baseball, including a number of famous musicians like Justin Timberlake. The only problem would be convincing the team to move east, which might mean realignment, which could be a bad thing or could be a good thing, depending on which side of the ball you fall on there. Stranger things have happened, but in the end, I think the city of Oakland will wake up and try to keep the A's right where they belong.
Now bring in the closer.
Strike one.
Strike two.
Strike three.
He's out.
Here's why MLB is better than the NFL or NBA, and it isn't even close.
Here's reason number 1,000 why baseball is better than the NBA and the NFL is because fans connect to it. It's a part of their lives and DNA, and there's no better example than Eddie House, the former NBA guard and NBA champion, was taken aback by the notion or the idea that his hometown team, the Oakland A's, could actually move. And he expressed themselves really, really well. And it was heartfelt on MLBBro.com. Take a listen.
Sad news I'm hearing today about MLB trying to force Oakland to get up out of the Coliseum. I know it's a Randall Stadium and so on and so forth. It was the reason why the Raiders left, being an Oakland native and native of the Bay Area. It seems like everybody's leaving the city of Oakland, which to me is a sad thing. The Warriors are gone over in San Francisco. The Raiders are in Las Vegas. A lot of people depending on those jobs at the Coliseum. Be it the parking attendant, being the hot dog vendor, being the person that was taking the tickets. It's a lot of jobs that was generated for the community. And it's unfortunate to see that another team could possibly be leaving. Hopefully that deal at Waterfront Park will be something that can happen, hopefully. But I would hate to see the Oakland A's leave like all the other teams of Oakland. Just fond memories of growing up. My favorite athlete of all time, Ricky Henderson. Going to watch him play, the Bash Brothers. Back in the day, my baseball team, we would catch Bart, go up there. We'd play pickle on the Bart train. And we would, go watch batting practice. It'd just be unfortunate if the A's aren't able to make something happen to stay in.
In the words of New York TV legend, the late Bill Jorgensen, thanking you for your time this time until next time. Rob Parker, out.
He can't get it. This could be an inside to Parker.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.